I give you Donna D.
Thanks for inviting me here to share today. I'm a little bit nervous. I always get nervous before I speak, and that's because I have to be honest about myself, and that's always uncomfortable for me. I didn't think a whole lot about what I wanted to share about on the ride up here, because if I get too into my head, I get too whacked out. So I thought, okay, I'll just kind of sit here and figure out what I want to say. But since it is a women's wrap, I'll just talk about my own experience, you know, coming into the program and some of the things that I faced over the years of my recovery. I come from a small town right outside of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I was the oldest of four children, grew up in a middle-class kind of hard-working family, and the town that I grew up in, and some of you may be familiar with this, it was a hard-working town, but a hard-partying town. So, you know, by the time I was 14, 15 years old, you know, it was the norm for us in our family or in our community, you know, for everybody to kind of just hang out with the adults and drink beer every weekend. I gravitated towards my dad's family because they were crazy. I mean, they were like, at 14, 15 years old, I was sitting at the kitchen table drinking beer and smoking cigarettes with my grandmother, you know, and I could get away with that stuff where I couldn't get away with that stuff at home with my mom. I like to talk about my relationship with my mom because I really believe who I am today has, she had such a strong I don't even know what the word I want to say, but, you know, it was because of her strength that I am who I am today. But when I was a kid, I hated my mother, hated my mom. I swore I would not grow up to be like her. And sometimes I say things that come out of my mouth, and I'm like, oh, my God, you're Kitty. That's my mom's name, you know. But I really respect her. I always had this thing where I felt like I had to compete with her for my dad's love. I don't know if any of you ever had that growing up, but I was the oldest, and I felt like I needed to be, I was really close to him, and I just never, I kind of felt like I was always in competition with my mom for my dad's love, if that makes sense to you. And, you know, and I think that was kind of like a, I don't know, it was just something that we could never, that I could never work through, you know, when I was a kid. And I just kind of did my own thing. There were a couple very traumatic experiences in my life early on that I believe, you know, I believe that I'm an addict and I have the disease of addiction, but I also believe that some things that happened in my life helped me get there maybe a little bit faster. I don't know. But I had a brother who I love very much who was burnt very badly when I was about 12 or 13 years old, and it was a direct result of an action that I had, and he almost died. And I remember when I, you know, when we were at a friend's house, and we went into the house, and I was so freaked out, and they said, your brother's going to die. And the first thing that they did was give me a Valium and a bottle of beer to calm my nerves. And that was how I coped with life. From that moment on until I stopped using, that's how I coped with everything. You know, there was another event where a family member molested me, and, you know, the way that I coped with that was by using. And the only way that I had the courage to tell anybody in my family that was happening was when I was drunk. But thankfully, at that point, when it finally did come out, I was able to, you know, my dad was like, okay, that's it, no more. You don't need to go there anymore. But, it, you know, it's like we never really dealt with it. We just pretended that it never happened. When I was 19 years old, the love of my life, my dad, was killed in a car accident, and it was a result of drunk driving. And at that point in my life, I mean, I just totally went crazy using drugs. And I used drugs and alcohol from the time I was a, you know, young teenager. But at that point at 19, I was just like, what the hell? Who cares? You know, and it was the only way for me to cope. And I felt like I was the oldest of four kids, My youngest brother was 7 years old. My dad was killed at 44, and my mom was 42, raising a family, and she had never worked. You know, and I felt like I was had just graduated from high school, and I was working, and I felt like I had to be the savior of the family. You know, I had to take on taking care of everybody, and I couldn't even take care of myself. But I just felt this enormous burden on me. And at that point, then I got into a relationship with a man, you know, who I had pretty much known all my life. We had dated off and on, and at that point, around 20 years old, I was kind of naive when I was using too, because I was like, there was this little community, and everybody kind of, I knew they smoked weed, I knew they took pills, I knew they drank and snorted cocaine, but I didn't know people used needles. You know, God forbid anybody use a needle. And I remember, you know, the first time that he came to the house and he was with my cousin and he said, you know, that they were shooting heroin. I was like, what? You know, like, I can't believe people do that in our town. And, you know, I tried to get him to stop, and I, you know, thought that if he loved me, he would stop. And, you know, the more that I tried to get him to stop, the more I realized that I could not be with him unless I joined him. And so, you know, shortly thereafter, I was putting a needle in my arm as well. And that was on a daily basis, and that went on for years. And, you know, we, in the midst of that, we got married because my family thought if you got married, everything would be okay, you'd grow up. You know, and we lasted in our own apartment for about 2 months. And, you know, it's just the insanity of the disease of addiction. You know, we live to use and use to live. And I live to use and use to live. And I really, you know, I say this a lot when I tell my story. I just, you know, I'm not a good coper. I do not cope with life very well. And I had to learn that in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I had to learn how to live life on life's terms because I was not able to do that for the longest time. You know, after getting married and, you know, then I got pregnant and, you know, of course, that was going to get me to stop. That didn't get me to stop using. I got arrested. That didn't work. You know, there was all kind of things until finally, you know, my mom, who at this point was like, okay, because, I don't know what kind of thief you guys were, but I always stole from my family. It was much easier to go in and rob the checkbook at home because I knew that they wouldn't press charges against me. You know, that was the kind of stuff that I did. I couldn't go into the store and rob from there because I'd be too freaked out. But anyway, my mom at that point said to me, you know, look, you need to do something with your life. I cannot do this anymore. I'm changing the locks. You're not welcome in my house. And she said, I'm going to take your kid away from you if you don't do something. And I vividly remember the last time I shot dope was September 30th, 1985. And I said to my girlfriend who I was shooting dope with, I said, this is the last time I'm going to do heroin. She said, oh, yeah, I heard that before. And I went into detox, which had been like probably the fifth or sixth detox that I had been in. But there was just something about that, you know, losing the whole connection with my family at that point that, like, kind of struck a chord with me. Because even though I didn't want to admit it, family has always been very important to me. We've always been a really close family, and I think that's why I fit so well in Narcotics Anonymous, because this is family to me. You know, no matter where I go, I feel at home. And anyway, I went into detox, and I wanted to leave, and two folks from Narcotics Anonymous came and 12-stepped me and said, you know, please don't leave. If you leave, you're going to go to state penitentiary. And they told me the truth, and, you know, of course, I didn't listen. I left and went home, and my husband was home detoxing on pills, and I thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And my sister was getting married that weekend, and I went to the wedding, and they came around with I was her maid of honor. They came around with a toast for everyone, and my mom had a bottle of ginger ale for me, and I said, oh, no, I'll take the champagne. And I drank the champagne, and that was a two-day blackout, literally, that I do not remember, that, you know, I did things that I never thought I was capable of doing. And I woke up that Monday morning, and I was like, damn, alcohol is a drug, because at that point I had a reservation that it really wasn't. And I knew, you know, normal people do not drink and black out for 2 days, you know, and get up on Monday morning wondering what the hell they did or how they got there. And I called the woman that came to 12-step me and said, Kathy, I just can't do this anymore. I need help. And that day was October 14th, 1985, and that was the last time I used a drink or a drug or put any chemical in my body. And my first couple months in Narcotics Anonymous, when I first came into the rooms, I had, you know, kind of been familiar with Narcotics Anonymous because my sister, God works in funny ways, and, you know, I see this happening every day in my life. And but my sister, who really hated my guts and didn't want to be around, and she moved from Harrisburg and came out to Slippery Rock to go to college to be away from me, was best friends with the man that started Narcotics Anonymous in the Harrisburg area. And so there was always all these connections. You know, it's like my husband says, it's like connecting the dots. You know, when you look back and you say, okay, this is A to B to C to D, you know, it all kind of, it's God's plan for us. And, you know, that's how I came to really get into the rooms and believe in Narcotics Anonymous. And I walked into the room, my first meeting, and saw some people that I shot dope with. And I thought, huh, if they can get clean, I think I can get clean. I think I can do this, because they were just as bad as me. And they were stealing electricity in their addiction, and I didn't do that. You know, so that was the kind of stuff that had me coming back. Like, you know, knowing that if they, a day at a time, wouldn't pick up, you know, a drink or a drug and were staying clean, that I too could do this. You know, and there were days early in my recovery where I sat back and I said, I don't know, I think they may be smoking weed, or maybe they're having a drink, or maybe they're not telling the truth, you know, because I always wanted to believe that there was, I guess it was a reservation. But I, you know, went to a meeting every day because that's what I was told to do. My first sponsor was a woman that I actually got high with, and you know, she stayed clean for about 7 years and ended up going back out. But she helped me tremendously early on in my recovery. I don't know about you all, but I know when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I thought, as a woman, I wanted to be the strong, independent, self-sufficient woman. And you know, I was like this scared little girl who was trying to find herself. And I'm still like that today. You know, 21 years later, some days I still feel like I'm this scared little girl trying to find herself. You know, and with the help of Narcotics Anonymous, hopefully I'll get there someday. And maybe not. It's progress, not perfection. But anyway, you know, they told me to go to a meeting every day, which I did. And my husband also was in recovery, and he got hooked up with a bunch of really strong men, and I got hooked up with, you know, the women that were in my life. They told me to make friendships with women, which was hard as anything for me to do because I didn't trust women. I don't know why I didn't trust them. I was the one that couldn't be trusted. It wasn't any of you that I couldn't trust. It was me, you know, but that was my excuse. I, you know, and plus I got good feelings off of the men. You know, I was this skinny little girl coming around the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, thinking I was all that, and, you know, I wasn't anything at all. But anyway, you know, got hooked up with my sponsor, went to a meeting every day because that's what they told me to do. That's what I was told to do. And I was told when I was 30 days clean that I needed to get a job so I could feel good about myself, so I could do something, so I could make a commitment, because never in my life have I ever made a commitment that I actually followed through with. As a kid, I would, you know, go to piano lessons, quit if I wasn't good enough. Art lessons, quit if I wasn't good enough. I went to, you know, dance lessons, quit because I wasn't good enough. You know, I could never really, like, start something and finish it. You know, I only finished school because my dad would have kicked my ass if I didn't go to school, you know, so that was like the reason that I did that. But other than that, I couldn't make a commitment to do anything. And when I came in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I was taught how to make a commitment and stick to it, you know, and feel good about that. You know, and this has all been like a learning process for me, and I think the longer I stay clean, the more I learn about myself, the more I say, okay, now I can put two and two together. Now I understand why I do the things that I do, but, you know, it just takes coming back day after day after day, meeting after meeting after meeting to get to that point, and I believe that. I truly believe in my heart that I'm an addict. There's no doubt in my mind, and has not been since the day that I finally came in here and surrendered. And I, you know, I don't know what that took. I mean, it took maybe me going through all the shit that I went through, but, you know, I was able to kind of surrender and accept the fact that I had the disease of narcotics, of addiction, and Narcotics Anonymous could save my life. I just want to talk a little bit about my early recovery and how crazy I was. And, you know, I came in with my husband, and of course it was all his fault because I was a drug addict. Had nothing to do with me. It was all his fault. I put the needle in my arm. And after 3 months, I was like, oh, the hell with this shit. I'm done with this man. And, you know, we ended up splitting up. And I, and you know, looking back, it was probably a good thing for me, but it was also a bad thing for me because I also jumped right into another relationship. You know, because the wheels were turning and I had it all figured out. I knew, you know, once I left Joe, I was going to get with this other guy. And, you know how we do. Plus that meant if I got involved with this other relationship, I didn't have to do any work on myself. I could just focus on that. My son was a year and a half old, and, you know, I had gotten a job for the first time that I actually was going to every day. I was going to my meetings. I literally hated my husband, hated him. I could not stand the sight of him. I could not talk to him on the telephone. I didn't want my son having anything to do with him because I was so resentful. And blamed him for everything that had happened in my life, when realizing that the first time I picked up when I was 13 years old, my disease of addiction started right then and there. You know, all of that other stuff, the needle was just the end of the rope for me, you know, and it had nothing to do with him. But it took me a long time, and, you know, I coming into these rooms in Narcotics Anonymous and talking about it, and for real, I had to go to therapy. I needed some intensive help in trying to deal with some of the issues that I had, you know, that I believe dated back to my childhood. But, you know, after being in this other relationship for 3 years, you know, figuring like coming, well, let me back up. When I had to, I did not cry the first 2 years of my recovery. The first time that I shed a tear was on my second year anniversary. And when I sat at the table and said, today's my 2 year anniversary, I literally lost it. And I was like, I don't know why I'm crying, you know, because I was in the room, you know, with a bunch of other recovering addicts crying my eyes out, and then realized that that had been the first time that I had cried about anything, you know, my addiction, my recovery, the stuff that I had done. And it was like the first time I had been emotional, because see, I'm this strong, hard-ass woman that couldn't feel anything. That's my problem. I don't want to feel. I don't want to cope. So, you know, I hold it all in until I can't take it anymore. And people put their arms around me, and they love me, and they said, it's okay. You're going to be okay. You know, and then I just went along in my recovery and, you know, working the steps and working with the sponsor and, you know, trying to work on the four step. And, you know, that was really difficult for me. You know, but I had a sponsor that I trusted, so it made it just a little bit easier, especially when I had to do the fifth step. You know, and finding a God of my understanding, and I'm like going all over the place here, but finding a God of my understanding and trying to be okay with that, because as a kid, I went to Catholic school. My family was like, you got to go to church every Sunday, whether you like it or not. You know, so there was no connection for me. But today I can see God working in my life every day. You know, I see it working, you know, in everybody's life as they stay clean a day at a time. You know, it's just like when I first came in, they said, you know, don't give up before the miracle happens. And that's so true. You know, and I guess everybody's miracle is different, but just staying clean a day at a time was a miracle for me. You know, because I could never imagine not putting a needle in my arm to live life. I couldn't imagine that. After 3 years, my husband and I started to kind of talk, and I started to work through the resentment that I had for him. And, you know, I had this little boy who needed his dad, and I don't know what it was. I guess I was growing up, or I really don't know. But we started to build a relationship, and we built a relationship not just on sex or on drugs, but literally a relationship where we liked each other. You know, it wasn't just about all the other things or the outside influences. It was, you know, building a trust. And, I call him my soulmate because I really do believe he is. And we ended up back together. And we ended up back together, and at the time that we ended up back together, I was pregnant. We got back together. We decided to, let me back up, because we had gotten divorced and then had to get remarried because I felt I had to get remarried because I was pregnant. We bought a house. And I decided to go to graduate school all at the same time. And, the only thing I did was start smoking again. I couldn't take that. But I had all this stuff going on in my life, and, you know, I was like 4 or 5 years clean at that point. And, you know, the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous taught me how to be able to, you know, make a commitment not only to my relationship, but to go to school, to get my master's degree, to be a mother, to be a sister, to be a daughter, to do all the things that you're supposed to when you're a so-called normal person. My husband and I have been together now since that point, and, you know, we've had our rocky roads, believe you me, because some of us are sicker than others, and I'm pretty damn sick. But, you know, we've gotten through. We weathered the storm. And I also believe that Narcotics Anonymous teaches us about relationships. You know, initially when I first came into the room, building a relationship with my sponsor was very, it was important because it taught me how to work through things that I would walk away from before. So I think that carried into my relationship not only with my family but with my husband, because I was able to, you know, work through it and talk about it and get to the other side and then be okay and forgive and not build resentment, you know, because for so long that my whole life was built on having resentments for everybody, from the time my relationship with my mother to my husband to, you know, everything else in my life. You know, within the time that my husband and I have been married, and I don't talk about this publicly, but because I'm in a women's group, I'll talk about this. I had an affair with somebody that he sponsored, and that went on for 2 years, and it was like I was using. My brother lived in California, and when he saw me at the end of it, I had lost like a ton of weight, and he was like, "My God, you look worse than when you were using." But it was the same thing. It was the same addictive behavior, the same pattern, you know, trying to get the good feelings off of somebody else where I wasn't getting it where I needed it. And but for the grace of God, I didn't pick up, and I don't know how I didn't pick up. It was a really, really hard time for me. But he didn't turn his back on me. You know, we worked it out. But I will tell you that it was really hard for me to walk back into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous after that came out. I was ashamed. I had the guilt, the shame, all those things that we carry with us. I didn't pick up a drug, but I picked up sex, I guess, you know. It was a really, really hard time for me. But there were people in my life that stuck by me. And there were people in his life that stuck by him, because there were lots of people that said, "Oh, you're crazy. You need to leave her." You know, but it was another point in my recovery where, you know, how you feel like you don't fit in anywhere, you don't fit in with your family, you don't fit in with the people you're using, you don't fit in anywhere. And it was like one of those points in my life where my true support group in Narcotics Anonymous, I still felt like I fit in there. Because I remember walking to my mom's house, and I said to my mom, "You know, Mom, I've been having an affair for the past 2 years with this guy." And she was like, "Oh, just don't tell Joe." Like, I can't not tell him? You know, but that's like kind of like where she was at, because I think that's how she was brought up. You know, she was like, just don't tell him. But I had to be honest and be truthful. And I did. And, you know, and I thought, okay, I'm just going to leave and not bother him. But I didn't feel like I fit in at home. And, you know, that's when I reached out to the people in Narcotics Anonymous and my sponsor and, you know, looked for support that I needed. And, you know, we worked through all of that. And, you know, thank God for that. You know, and it all really boils down, I think, as a woman, to self-esteem and self-worth, being somebody, trying to be somebody that I'm not, and being okay with who I am. I'm a friggin' control freak. I sponsor Ashley. She knows I am a total control freak over everybody in my life. You know, and I have to take a step back and say, okay, you know, you cannot control this. You're powerless. You know, let's work the first step, that kind of deal. And I have to apply the steps and the principles in my life every day to just not only use them, but like normal everyday kind of stuff. And I think that's the beauty of the program, because we have that. You know, other people don't really have that. You know, and it's okay to say, you know, I'm feeling crappy today. You know, I just don't feel right today, and I'm not sure why. And there are a lot of times I don't know why. You know, and I can bang my head against the wall trying to analyze and figure out why, and sometimes the answers come and sometimes the answers don't. But I know if I stay clean a day at a time, I'll be okay. There's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, all the cliches that they told me when I first came in are absolutely true. You know, and go to a meeting every day and work with the sponsor and work with new people and, you know, even do it when you don't want to do it, because that's the time that you need it the most, when you don't want to. You know, and I've gotten complacent in my recovery. When my son got a little bit older and got into high school and was playing sports, you know, I felt like it was really time for us to be parents, that we needed to kind of like be there for him, be at the t-ball games and be at the baseball games and be at the football games and be the president of the athletic association, and we did all that stuff. You know, and then when my son graduated from high school and there was no more of all that stuff, you know, we knew that I knew in particular this was the place to come, because this is, not that I ever stopped going to meetings, but, you know, it's like life takes over. And I kind of look at Narcotics Anonymous as a stepping stone for me to grow up, because it really has taught me how to grow up. If it wouldn't be for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, jails, institutions, and death, for sure, you know, and I'd still be sticking needles in my arms, no doubt. And we were laughing because my son is in recovery now, and he spoke about thinking when he was old that he'd still be smoking weed and, you know, drinking beer, and we talked about that on the way up here today. And I remember feeling the same way, that I'd be in a rocking chair, drinking a beer, listening to rock music, and smoking weed. It's insane, like insane, but that's, you know, kind of like was my life ambition, you know. But today I have other ambitions. You know, I'm going to be a grandmother. You know, I've got great people in my life. You know, I have a relationship with my family, and you know, in particular with my mother, that is beyond my wildest dreams. You know, because I respect her, I love her, and I know a lot of the woman that I am today is because of her. And I get crazy and emotional because, you know, I think, I don't know how she put up with me for all the years that she did. But she prayed to God a lot. She used to work at a Catholic school and pray the rosary that I'd get clean. It worked. God directed me to the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I don't know how much time I have, and I don't want to hog it all up. I do know that, you know, I'm grateful for the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful for the steps and traditions. I'm grateful for the people that have come before me. You know, and I'm particularly grateful for the people that come after me, because they're the ones that help keep me clean, you know, and help me to grow up and become the woman that God meant me to be. You know, and not every day am I perfect, but I do know that, you know, it's progress, not perfection, and I don't have to be the best at everything. You know, and I can, and I have character defects, and I know that, you know, I can be aware of them, and some days they come out, and some days they don't, and that's okay. As long as I don't pick up a day at a time, you know, I'll be okay. I guess that's really all I have. Thanks.